these people are not pro-life, they're pro-religion.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
They fought for this to be overturned because it goes against their religion. So now, not only do I not have my own body autonomy, I'm now having someone's religious views being pushed on me.
Mm. You're having to live under religious law.
See, that's a red flag. It's a red flag.
Also, I don't think everybody's been like formally completely introduced. Everybody knows everybody. Yeah. But like Alvin, Evo, Alvin, Gina, Josh, Evo, Josh.
Pleasure.
I'm Eddie, Edward, if you're, you know, Mr. Overgold, if you're nasty, that kind of thing.
Hello.
Yeah. But yeah, that's like, I've always noticed that I've really felt like white people really get a second chance more so than other groups. Like the number of white people that are like successful that have like some crazy ass youth story of like, mm-hmm. yeah, I was in prison,
yeah.
and then I was addicted to this drug and I did this and that. Then I moved to New York and now I'm a fucking, you know, banker or whatever. It's like, man, I'm making 90 grand a year. It's like, man, everybody that I know who has that, right. Every nigga I know that's got that first chapter of his story, the last chapter looked this, like where you would expect it to be. And I'm not saying that those white people shouldn't get to do that, but.
They don't have the, they're not criminalized by the color of their skin. So like they have that advantage off the bat.
Yeah. So do you think it's just like, is it like the criminal justice element or is it people not being willing to give them a job because they've got a criminal record? Is it like what elements of it is it? Because I guess it's everything.
I just seen something on TikTok where a guy, and in particular, he was talking about a story about a woman who was a black woman and she was educated, worked for a pharmaceutical company for many years and then lost her job. She went and put her resume on monster.com, saw that she really wasn't getting the responses that she thought she would. So she tried a few things, you know, changed around a few things on her resume and tried to tweak her profile a little bit better and still with no result. So she just thought to herself, she started to kind of feel like that it may have been racial, like there was like a software program or the way that the algorithm for monster.com worked that it was preventing her from opportunities. So she created a whole nother profile, changed her last name to like white man or something like that. And you know, and put her race, like she was white, changed her race, changed her phone number, and immediately she started to get leads and phone calls and emails and job responses
with the same resume
with the same resume, with the same exact
that she
resume
had as her being a black woman.
No, that shit is real. I feel like I've heard that kind of thing replicated in like a bunch of stuff. Like John Bao, I think, at like the Chicago University or whatever. He did this thing. He did the same thing, but he did it like vocally. So he would call up to a realtor to like find a place or whatever, and he could like perfectly do a white standard accent, a black like sounding voice, and a Hispanic sounding voice. And he did each of those voices, didn't change any of the words that he was saying. Like it wasn't slang or anything like that. It was literally just the timbre of
the
voice.
The timbre, yeah.
Yeah, and the differences was exactly what the fuck you would expect between those accents.
That's actually what that movie Sorry Not to Bother You with Lakeith Stanfield is about.
Oh, yeah. That white voice is white powerful.
Hell yeah.
I don't need you. You got to put a little more air into it. Like you don't have a care in the world.
That shit is true. Yeah, everybody code switches. It's like a small little tiny act of dominance. Like, no, you gotta, if you want respect, if you want to be treated as a person, if you want to, you know, sort of carry authority with you, you gotta speak like you look different, and that's how you'll earn your place in this society. It's a small little thing, but like that code switching shit is low key quite degrading.
I intentionally try not to do it.
So do you actively fight that or do you just don't bother?
When you are around a lot of white people, that over time eventually you sound differently. Like I remember going to undergrad and being around all these white people and then I go back home and people would say I talk funny. So like that kind of shit. So I don't actively like code switch. For example, at work, I was literally telling another black man at work about this. The only thing I don't say at work is nigga. So my word choice stays the same. I try my hardest to keep the same voice. So I don't actively code switch, but I do think that like some natural like ebbs and flows and like how I say shit obviously happens. But I don't have a white voice. Like I intentionally say like, you know, you from Atlanta, not Decatur, nigga. So like go ahead and like, you know, make this shit happen. So
That's something I very much respect about you, Alvin, because I feel like you've got a pretty distinctive, like, not even just Atlanta, but a bit country accent, and you're like one of the smartest niggas I know, and you don't ever like try and do that thing that people do where they try and like they buy into the idea that an accent has something to do with intelligence, so they switch it and it just like kind of reaffirms the stereotype. You're like, this is who I am, this is where I'm from, and yes, I'm smarter than you and more qualified in this thing, let's get on with the work. So I appreciate that shit. Like, I it's very admirable, because I definitely choose my words different.
It's quite draining, because the field that I work in, I'm gonna say that it's dominantly filled with more Caucasians.
Caucasoids.
And I come from the hood, so I definitely have to code switch, because I naturally just want to talk more street like. I find myself saying no worries like 15 times a day.
Yeah. No stress, buddy. It's all good.
Yeah. No worries.
Yeah.
Get your king.
I feel like it's harder for women. Some of the things that, like, my job, right? So, like, we're casual and shit now. So people at my job have started to, like, co-op, like, my speech, like my word choice.
See.
So, like, I say bet, and, like, they'll be like, okay, bet. Or I wear joggers and shit. And, like, people have, like, made that, like, a thing now. So, like, there's, like, a joggers crew and shit. And, like, we're wearing fucking, yeah, like, tech fleece joggers and shit every day now. So, like, but I feel like a lot of, like black women especially don't get that same benefit of the doubt. So, I feel like black men oftentimes get to be, like, the cool guy.
Right.
And black women get to, I mean, don't get that same, like, benefit.
Right. Do you think so? Because I feel like black women also get imitated, but you feel like in the workplace they get more, and Gina, maybe you can speak to this, get more controlled and chastised rather than mimicked and caricatured?
I personally feel that, like, we're held to a higher standard. So whereas, like, say, for example, Alvin was saying that in his workplace they're more casual, right, clothing-wise. If I really adhere to, like, that casual clothing, I'm more than likely going to get looked at. So I have to come in with, like, a little bit more just to be seen as an equal.
And you think that's distinct from the way you see maybe black men being treated in that same environment?
Personally, I always feel like there's a bro code. So whether it's...
I've
seen it happen with Evo a lot.
Yeah.
I actually used to work in a very male-dominated field. I used to work for in the automotive field. And as much as I thought I was broed up with these dudes, they would meet Evo and just push me right to the side. So I think that bro code will always trump.
Yeah, it's definitely not surprising.
Well, it was interesting because, like, you worked there for a while before we got together, and so she had tight relationships with a lot of the guys there. I mean, like, they were, you know, they worked together and they hustled together, you know, selling stuff, and they were a unit, you know. I mean, I could tell when I went there how they were a team. But once we got to know each other and I got to know them individually, like, we broed up, you know. And then so, like, sometimes we would be out in places,
yeah, shots at the bar, they're looking for Evo, not me.
They're coming to get me.
Yeah.
And just nobody's even coming to get her, you know. So yeah,
I'm
definitely
probably
happens.
Maybe so guilty good. Of that kind of thing. There's always a little bit of a barrier.
I could see that, like, going both ways, though.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've experienced that, too, but just on with the shoe being on the other foot.
Yeah.
Like, how so?
It's predominantly women. And it's like, oh, I'm cool with the ladies, but they meet, like, you know, a girl that I know, or, like, just a girl comes up, and then it's like, oh, girl, oh, my God, I love your lashes. Just find anything to compliment, and then it's like they just welcome with open arms. And then they kind of, like, push me to the side, and then they just having their girl talk. So I don't know. Like, I get what you're saying, because it is bullshit, like, when it comes in the workforce and how that could affect you and your career, impact you and your career. That's bullshit. But I guess, like, when it just comes to being able to understand someone or just bond with someone, I feel like it can kind of go both ways. Especially after 5:30
you know, when
you off work, you know?
Josh, I would definitely agree. I could definitely see that happening, but in the workplace, I definitely do think there's a slight difference.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely a difference between, like, oh, you're a boy, I'm a boy, like, let's talk about boy shit, and, like, I'm yeah. now disrespecting the value that you bring as a woman to this workplace or the way you move because of the fact that you're not also a boy. So I think it's there's a little bit of a, I think maybe a gray area between those two things, because I definitely relate to yeah, men definitely. Differently than I do to women, but I try to not let that bleed into the way that I treat people, but maybe there's an implicit bias or whatever. But yo, one thing I was going to say about that code switching shit is I don't think I'm like at 100, but like I don't operate at 100 around whites, because it sometimes feels menstrual. There feels because I feel like there's shit that I do around black people that's like tongue-in-cheek or making fun or like flamboyant that I don't feel comfortable operating the same way. Is that just me or
the piece that maybe Eddie is thinking about is that like when people like you and I come from the same place, there's a different level of connection. Mm. So the way that we might speak to each other is going to hold a different kind of weight.
Okay.
Versus just like someone we met at work.
Yeah, it's. I guess what I'm getting at is kind of like, so what Alvin said of like, if I go bet to somebody that's black and they say that back, it's like, okay, this is an understanding. Whereas if I say it to somebody yeah. white and then they say the same thing back to me, now I feel like an animal in a zoo a little bit, or I feel like they've taken something and copied it, and I don't like feeling like that. Like I don't say nigga around white people because yeah. I feel like it's giving the wrong energy. Even if they know they can't say it, it's like I don't want them to feel like, oh, I'm down, or like, oh, let me try that, or anything like that. Or like even like when I'm around black people, we joke about being black on some nigga shit. Like we'd be like, oh, you know, niggas are this way, niggas are that way. I don't talk like that around white people because it's I don't want to be on display. And that's what I'm getting at. Like I feel like when I'm too black around white people, it feels like I'm putting on a show. Like they're like you catch them taking notes, you know what I'm saying? Like you're just operating, like it's yeah. two black people operating, and you see a crowd of white people like, oh, interesting, what, dear God, that's fascinating, oh my goodness, you know, smashing. And then you're like, man, and then I switch and I'm like, okay, cool. Hello, everyone. Let's, you know, this is the meeting, because I don't want to be on that. So that's kind of what I'm trying to get at.
I feel you.
Y'all just I be making it up in front of white people. Oh, okay.
I just feel like as you were saying that, do you feel like if there are white people watching you, do you think there's like a sense of envy there?
Maybe, but not
because like everybody want to be black, but don't nobody want to be black type shit.
Yeah, I think it's an imbalanced sort of envy. It's the same kind of envy that rich people have for poor people. Like they like the imagery, but they don't really if they had the opportunity to trade, they wouldn't. You know what I mean? So they want the capacity yeah. to pick a little bit or go or observe or go, oh, that's interesting, or like, oh, niggas do that. I mean, I didn't really say niggas, but you know, you said it, kind of a thing, as opposed to being like, oh, I genuinely wish that I were where you are and you were where I am. I don't think that they have that kind of jealousy. I think it's the kind of jealousy that niggas have about women getting free drinks, but they know damn well they wouldn't trade places with a woman.
That's a good point.
Oh, I never thought that men were jealous about us getting free drinks.
What?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
You know how many times I wish I could go to the bar? You know how many times I wish I could go to the bar and just kind of bat my eyes and get a free drink?
Right.
Right.
Doesn't happen.
Now you got to wiggle that dick. You might get one. Who knows?
Yo.
I was like, what is Evil talking about?
I mean, I have gotten free drinks, don't get me wrong, but typically, typically, if we're in an environment, right? If we're in an environment and the objective is to get free drinks, I'm deploying my wife. I'm saying, hey, babe, why don't you go ahead over there and get us these drinks.
So, you come with a crew of women, I'm drinking for free the whole night.
Ooh, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, I see.
You got to play to those drinks, you know?
Just not at a different type of club, but it's...
Eddie, though. I guess. Eddie, I'm gonna be that guy, man, and I'm gonna go ahead and say What's it. Up? So, the code switch argument for you is a little bit different than the code switch argument for other niggas. So,
okay.
I want to preface that by saying that you do not sound white to me, because you have like a deepness.
So, yeah.
You have okay. a deepness in your voice, like that I immediately like identify as a nigga. But like, bro, your word choice and just like how you move through this shit, like your regular ass speech is most niggas code switch. So I think that like your particular brand of code switch is more, it's a little bit more nuanced than the regular nigga, I will say, because your regular word shit is just like you would be my code switch. If I was code switching, I would try to sound
like
you.
To this. I don't I think you're not taking into account how I joke. Like, you're taking into account, like, maybe how I, like, construct an argument or, like, how I'm talking right now. But you got to take into account the when I'm saying something goofy, which is maybe
nigga, your goofiness is Shakespearean as fuck, man. I don't think you put that into perspective either.
100% I agree with that. Okay, cool. You like, yo, Eddie reads mad books.
Yo.
I don't know that. We gotta stop spreading this misinformation, bro. I don't know how to read. I never learned. I just listen to mad TikToks in the background. I have it on.
Don't even finish the whole thing.
Downplayed the hell out of that.
Yeah, it's, I'm not trying to. Yeah, no, I got a street reputation to uphold. But yeah, I think the free drink thing comes with a certain dynamic. Like, if you was getting free drinks, being bothered by people that you didn't want to deal with, I'd rather be sober, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, the drink ain't worth the nigga that comes with it, I would say.
You know what? In some cases, I feel like some girls will take full advantage of that.
Oh, that's a fact.
I mean, we've been in situations. They will squeeze that for every drop that it's got and lead that man on to infinity and in the end just dump him off the edge.
Do you think that's common? Because I feel like that's a pretty common talking point, but I wonder the percentage of people, women, who are actually doing that. Gina, have you done this? You got kind of quiet.
No.
Okay.
No, I got quiet because I've seen it happen. Mm. And it almost feels kind of shameful as a woman because I'm like, this is the type of power that men can use against us. They can say things like this. And it pisses me off because women a lot of times want to talk about independency and, you know, I don't need no man, but then we'll do shit like that. And then me as a woman, I get grouped up in that shit. I like to buy my own drinks, so I don't have to worry about nobody bothering me. And that's just how I roll. But I've definitely seen it happen.
It definitely does. That's a difficult one because I've seen the counter argument to that being like, well, if I'm going to have to suffer under sexism, patriarchy, etc., I may as well figure out a way to use some of it to my advantage. Like, what's the phrase? Don't talk about what patriarchy is doing to you. Talk about what patriarchy can do for you. Kind of a stance. Mm. And I kind of understand where some people are coming from with that. Like, when you think about like OnlyFans or any of that kind of sex worker adjacent stuff, it's like, well, shit, niggas are gonna do this anyway. Maybe I could get a bag off of it. Maybe I can kind of cushion my life and make it a little bit more uncomfortable because, you know, shit, we getting constitutional rights.
If I don't, somebody else will.
The Supreme Court, so, you know. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I don't know that I agree with that, but I kind of see where they're a little bit coming from. Like, I can't change the laws. I can't change the whole society, but I can, in the meantime, I can make my paper with what these expectations are. So, I don't know.
I just feel like it still gives men ammo to point the finger at a woman and say, you know, bitches be like this.
Is that woman's responsibility, though?
And like, what do you mean? And their responsibility as far as
like, in the sense of like, I feel like I agree. Sometimes like women will have a certain shitty behavior at some percentage, and then men will use that as like a like the Fresh and Fits and the fucking Roommates and the Kevin Samuels or whatever will use that as fuel for like bitches be like X, Y, Z. And I'm wondering like, is that even something that should be the responsibility of women? Like, oh, if my homegirl like kind of takes advantage of a guy by buying a drink that he, you know, is she and myself now responsible for the fact that these other niggas are going to kind of twist it as if women are really the primary problem in this environment? You know what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. So I'm going to say it's partially our responsibility because we can't change the way men look at us. I feel like as women, we can take control of that within ourselves. If I set the example of I'm not the type of woman that wants to take advantage of men, then maybe I can help another woman see it that way. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the times men are not going to listen to what a woman has to say about the way that they view us.
That's definitely true. That's definitely true. Okay, yeah, no, I can definitely see that for sure.
But listen, I'm not hating on nobody getting a bag either.
I got to hate on some of it. I got to hate on at least a little bit. Because some of it is like, I can never guilt somebody for the way that they survive or the way they get their money when it's needed. But it's also like some of this stuff is like, I feel like a lot of OnlyFans folks or like sex worker folks, some of them have, not, I don't know if it's 50-50, I'm not going to say all, but some percentage I've seen have like a quite a deep disgust for their clientele, which I'm not sure how I feel about that. Like, maybe there's an argument that the clientele are actually trash and that they're bad human beings. You know what I mean? They're using their money in order to get sex from women, and so they aren't deserving of decency. But I'm also like, I don't know, man. Like,
I think there's something to that, man. Like,
That's why I'm conflicted.
There was a conversation on Twitter. This was maybe a month ago, where it was, we can't normalize sex work without normalizing the clientele, and there's a disconnect between those two things. Like, we're trying to normalize sex work, but then the people who are the clients of sex workers are still very much like looked at as less than, as disgusting white people.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at you. I'm just, I know you're laughing at
the chat. I saw the same shit. Yeah,
you're right. I completely forgot to introduce this hoe. We halfway through the fucking show. Welcome everybody to Waving the Red Flag Podcast, the number one sex worker normalization and dating podcast in the universe. Joined today by Shit Talk Friday. Sorry guys, I don't know how. Yeah, I'll edit this bitch together later. Evo, Gina, welcome to the pod. How y'all doing? How y'all feeling? Thanks for coming through.
Thank you for having us.
Happy to be here.
We just started talking, goddamn. But that's a good sign. That's a good sign. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'll put a footnote.
If it feels good, you just go with it, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Much like sex work.
And it felt good. Yes, sir.
Also much like sex work. Yeah.
All right.
And it's going to cost somebody, you know?
It's coming.
With the normalization of sex work thing, that's what always is in my mind. That we're like, sex work is work. Decriminalize sex work. Normalize it. Make it okay. Stop shaming. Stop the whorephobia. But there still seems to be a disconnect of, there still seems to be the sense that clientele, purchasers of this thing, are disgusting, not deserving of dignity, that their consent doesn't matter. I don't think that that's entirely, like, there's a way to make that make sense. Like, you can distinguish the dealer from the user in decriminalization. And in the same way, you can say the sex worker is not criminal, but the sex client is criminal. And so I don't know, maybe that's the direction that we're going in. And I see arguments for that hold weight, where you go, no, it's fine to do sex work. It's actually, but it's not okay to buy it. I see that argument being, that argument does hold water, but I'm just not sure. It seems strange for people to kind of be so celebratory, because they're not just saying, hey, don't shame us. They're saying some people are saying it's empowering, and we're celebrating sex work, and there's a beauty to this industry. And I don't think you can say those things and simultaneously shit on the clients.
I mean, without the clients, there would be no sex work.
That's what I'm thinking. There is no industry without clients. There is no industry without people who want to purchase these goods. There is no, OnlyFans girlfriend experience without lonely men, particularly who want that connection. I don't know. I've seen lots of different takes on it, because I've seen some people who have like a very holistic, like they think of it as something quite spiritual that they're doing. That they're something like physical therapists. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Where they feel like they're healing and helping someone, solving their needs and kind of looking at it in that aspect.
Oh damn!
Which
a rub and tug is so healing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it can be.
Never know. That might have saved somebody's life one day. Like, I'm pretty sure a rub and tug have saved many niggas' lives that you do not know the name of.
Yeah. It's like, because I think we think of sex as so nasty that it's like, oh, if you sell it, dude, I think maybe that's even part of the whorephobia stuff is like, but it's like what a therapist usually does is what a friend does. So a therapist is kind of selling you something like pseudo friendship for an hour and a half at a time. A sex worker is also selling you some form of intimacy in the form of a subscription or a session or whatever the fuck. So the ones that take a spiritual element to it of like, I'm not a hooker or a prostitute or a whore or any of that. I'm a sexual healer. Like, I also very much see where they're coming from with that take.
That's like an added level of service right there.
Mm. Yeah, but that's what high-level escorts do. Like, literally, like, that's what separates themselves from just, like, an average trick on the street.
Really?
Not a trick on the street, but, like, a prostitute. Like, they provide, like, a whole...
I think
whole...
you just say full-service sex worker now. I think that's the... It's like African-American, you know?
I don't give a fuck. But they...
okay. Be careful.
All right. I mean, she, okay.
Yeah, no,
what was the words you used, buddy? What was the words you used?
I'm sorry. Well, I was.
But like, just that full service of like an escort, like, you know, that you call and like they show up in like a Uber XL, something like that. Like, they actually provide like the more of that full service. Like, I'm here with you for the entire night. Like, I'll go to you can take me to a ball or like an event and then something like that. Or like even like a gigolo. Like, they provide more of a higher standard of that sexual service. It's more companionship.
Funny thing is, you know, following what you're saying, I've heard of like high status men hiring escorts to take to events as dates to help them work the room, and not even be like a sexual thing. Just, you know, a woman by your side that looks really good, that can kind of soften an environment where you may need to penetrate, as far as like maybe business wise, or, you know, or throw somebody off their kilter, you know, and by having this beautiful woman with you and really extracting some type of business or information out of someone, you know, and using escorts in that sense.
Yeah,
there's like a secret weapon.
Yeah, there's a lot of services like that. There's like people who are hired out to be like your friends. Like, this is a nigga in Japan who just, he makes all of his money by just being like,
I heard that.
Hired
I seen
out
that.
To just,
I
yeah,
seen that.
To just hang with people. Yeah. Like, I'm just, what I forget what he calls himself. He's like a nothing man or something like that. He just hangs around you.
Yeah,
to do nothing,
something like that.
To eat with you, to just sit, to like chill, just have a warm
and it's
body.
It's like a thing
next
out there.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if it really is a thing or if it's just that one nigga, but like, I feel like when Western culture gets a hold of something that any Japanese person does, it's just like they're crazy over there. But it's just one crazy motherfucker.
I'm not 100% sure about this, but I think that it has something to do with such a large population living in such confined spaces that a lot of people end up living solitude lives.
Oh, that's definitely a fact.
And so hiring a friend, you know, it's like a popular thing where you could just, you know, hire somebody to eat with you for a little bit, so you're not eating by yourself and just have a conversation with, or you may even not say nothing, but just be in company of somebody, so you're just not alone.
I could definitely see the value of it, like, and I don't think there would be anything shameful about like doing it. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yo,
where
Evo, man, Evo, I gotta say this, man. You do this amazing thing. You've done it several times where you say like, oh, you know, I don't know for sure, and then you say like this, like super, like detailed, like well thought out, like research back thing. You're like, you know, I don't know for sure, but let me just lay out like some literature, like some some real scientific shit for y'all. Real,
it's a disclaimer I gotta put out, you know, because truthfully, a lot of it is just based on my, you know, like my little bit of experience that I know. I don't really do like no in depth research, you know. But
he just did it again right now.
Yeah, he's doing it right now.
The disclaimer. Yo, real talk.
Footnotes, a bibliography.
You got a little bit of my secret sauce there.
A 2021 study
on the show.
The following,
I started calling him Guru Evo. He just be going off.
Got big brains. Glad to have it. So what's your take on, you know, as somebody deeply impacted by the new legislative event, Evo, what do you think about the Roe v. Wade getting overturned?
Oh, man. That's a deep one. Honestly,
impacted.
Honestly, I didn't think it was going to happen, to be honest with you. I felt that them overturning this decision would, like, put such a stain on the judicial system and the history of the way that, you know, these decisions were made, and that now it just opens up Pandora's box. It opens up like this. Now, what else can we overturn? What else can we undo and unwind? Like, these were like decisions that were like, they were etched in stone and they were just never touched. And now it's like, where the fuck do we go?
Oh, you know? Yeah.
You know, I feel like it's crazy in itself that they overturned it. But now that they did, it's like they just opened up an avenue of the ability to overturn other shit, and I'm scared of that. Like, I felt that because of, you know, like they weren't going to allow that to happen, and that because they did, just shows how wrong I was. And now I'm actually very concerned about what this power that they possess, what they can do with it.
They showed us already.
Yeah, and so if this is the beginning, I'm thinking already, like, you know, I mean, it's sad to say that I'm thinking beyond this already, because I'm like, if they starting with this, like, what are the plans now? You know, and as far as, like, the actual overturning of Roe v. Wade, my heart goes out to all of these women that are affected by this. You know, like, I'm a very big advocate about women being praised for what they do as far as giving life and the things that they put their bodies through, you know, just to be mothers. And that should be respected. So, you know, at the beginning, I was very speechless about it. I was very like, I didn't even know how to feel because, one, I'm not a woman, you know? So like, I tried to just like sit in my thoughts and really imagine what a woman would be going through right now. And to think about it is just heartbreaking. Honestly, I didn't mean to pull it down like that, but you know, it's
not at all.
It's a tough subject. But what are your thoughts on it? I mean, I would love to hear that because.
I don't know what's the room feeling right now. What do we think, Alvin, Gina, Josh?
I want to hear from a woman, personally.
Yeah. I was thinking that.
Actually,
but,
you know, yeah. Let's go there first. Let's give space for that.
I'll be honest. This subject is kind of hard for me to talk about because my initial feeling is rage. I have a daughter. I have friends who have daughters. I'm obviously a woman. I have many female friends. And the fact that we now no longer have the choice to say, this is my body and this is what I choose to do with it, just makes me feel like, as a woman, we are going backwards. And now, what do I do for my daughter and all of these other women that I know for them not to feel that way? Like, I almost kind of feel lost.
Yeah, because it's like there's not really a path. Like you're taking a step backwards. So even a step forward is like mm-hmm. to where it should have been. So it's like, and it seems like such a, because it's like a Supreme Court decision. It seems like such a behemoth of a thing to try and fight back against. Like, you got to protest to get a law at the highest court changed back. Otherwise, you just try and figure out the best way to do what you can with the new shit.
And that's my thing. Like, where do we even start?
Yeah.
Like, they feel like there's no light at the end of the tunnel. And it's, I honestly, like, can't even collect my thoughts around it because I just honestly just feel rage.
Yeah, that's totally.
I'm sure you're not alone.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are probably feeling that way because, it's all given very Handmaid's Tale type shit because it's like, it definitely seems like the end of an era or the beginning of a new one, whichever one is more scary. But it feels like, if this, then what? Is it birth control next? Is it other things? Like, can other kinds of laws start to be made? Is there a greater reason for this? Because, like, not to get conspiratorial, but it's like, is there a motivation beyond just the, like, political ideology of abortion and where life starts and shit like that? Or is this, like, a calculated push to increase the population output of women? You know what I mean?
I heard about that theory.
Okay.
So the reason why I don't think it is because of the private entities that have expressed pro-abortion sentiment. So, Eddie, we'll talk about this one. We'll talk about this one afterwards. But has been on record saying that they don't have enough labor, that they're not going to have enough labor to staff their company by 2024. Like, they're running out of labor. So if there's any company that wants to push a population boom, it's also come out very strongly saying, We're pro-choice. We'll give you, you know, all of your benefits to travel to a state where you can get an abortion if you need one. We'll give you time off.
Companies, I think I saw say the same thing.
Set the same thing. Like, again, companies that rely on labor, on their people businesses have said the same thing. So and they're also among the biggest political donors. So I don't necessarily think that it's more than an ideological thing. I think it's literally just like a few people who are Bible thumpers and have misinterpretations of shit that pushed an agenda based on their own ideological beliefs.
Okay.
That's personally, I tried to put myself in the other position, which is someone who considers themselves pro-life. And from this little bit of digging that I did, it seems like these people are not pro-life, they're pro-religion. And they fought for this to be overturned because it goes against their religion. So now not only do I not have my own body autonomy, I'm now having someone's religious views being pushed on me.
Mm. Definitely. You're having to live under religious law.
Correct. Where that's supposed to be, you know, church and state are supposed to be separated. But now there's like a direct link. And anybody who says otherwise is full of shit.
That's scary where that could go. I mean, what has already happened is scary because I'm thinking about like what the next, and I don't know like how this manifests at like the state level. Like, because I mean, like you said, there are companies that are funding their workers going to different states and stuff. So I'm assuming it's not like no woman in America can get access to it, but now it's going to become like over time, it's going to become harder and harder and harder. What the next 10 years are going to look like for for children's outcomes, because it's going to be a lot of kids that don't have the resources that they might have otherwise had because their mother didn't have, you know, the option to terminate the pregnancy. A lot of women who's like earning ability and like economic power is going to be reduced over the next 10 years. It seems like it'll be.
Yeah. So right now, the next target, and Clarence Thomas wrote about three specific cases in his concurring opinion, but Griswold is going to be the next target, the right to contraception. So if that becomes the case, then it becomes more difficult. But right now we're in the phase where it's an organizational thing, because now you can just work with grassroots organizations to get women where they need to be. There's a plan that Elizabeth Warren put forth where you could just start clinics on federal land, and there's federal land in every single state. So as opposed to like having to travel to New York, you can just travel to another city perhaps. So right now it's bad, but it's something that people can organize around, and it becomes a community effort. What you see going into midterms and then in the next presidential election is this looks like America pre-1973, where there's a federal abortion ban, where like you can't get it anywhere legally. So I think that's the fear. And then again, if they attack Griswold, now I no longer have the right to contraception. So that's what I think the worry is. That's what my worry is.
Do those two things seem likely?
That there's a federal abortion ban?
Yeah.
Increasingly, man. Like, I mean, so they're not going to have a supermajority in any given point. It's the map doesn't look like the people that are proponents of that have a supermajority anytime soon. But what you see in this case is they don't have the same respect for the rule of law that the Democrats seem to have. So what I anticipate happening is that, you know, you get a GOP president, you get a GOP majority, and you get the filibuster abolished, which is something that our current Democratic Congress has been reluctant to do. So if they abolish the filibuster, then they can do whatever the fuck they want. But there's this whole thing where it's like, oh, it, you know, it's president and all this kind of shit that the Democrats seem to hold them to. But the GOP people, as evident by the Supreme Court, don't seem to give a shit about that.
And so they can get stuff done by just sort of steamrolling through what would be like a conviction.
They can get it done without the supermajority needed to end a filibuster.
And that further proves my point. If you're going to restrict potentially access to contraceptive, what is that rooted in? That's rooted in religion.
Oh yeah.
So like further proves my point.
I mean, at that point, that seems like it'd be so difficult to make the argument for. Like, the abortion thing is insane, but banning contraception at any level, that seems even more insane. But like, because now you're definitely no longer talking about preserving life at that point. Like you can't possibly make that argument at that point. You're talking about something totally different. You're talking about like the divine need to create children or something like that. Or fuck, I guess this is the way that it would be, because this is how it would, like, in abstinence only kind of schools, when they teach this, the argument that you use is not we're trying to increase pregnancies, but that we don't want to normalize sex, and that having access to contraceptions normalizes sex out of wedlock, and like that the argument is that contraceptives cause pregnancy, and so by banning them you're preventing unwanted pregnancy, which makes no sense, but that's the argument that would be made, which is actually kind of scary, because I think that could actually definitely work.
You know what I just just thought of, right? So just imagine if they did ban contraceptive. I feel like we would have another baby boom. Mm. And what did that do for the economy?
Was it good?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, okay, yes, yeah. It was great for the economy.
Yeah.
So there may could, be, yeah. I mean, if you want to like throw conspiracies out there, I mean, that sounds like a legitimate hidden agenda.
I know we said that the companies are, but I'm very curious about, and again, maybe we're just getting conspiratorial and it is what it is, but.
Oh yeah, we absolutely are. We're going down the rabbit hole.
That's economics though. That's economics. That's,
yeah. Yeah.
It is.
That's a thing. I mean,
it is a thing.
Like the government might be thinking about those kinds of things, even if the companies themselves aren't thinking about that, like 18 year out, you know, outcome, or even the 6 year out outcome. And I'm also wondering if those companies are like, because companies say they, for that triple bottom line of like being woke enough while, you know, also using, you know, slaves or whatever labor, like they kind of say anything. But I'm very curious about where their dollars actually go or don't go. You know what I mean? Because you can give a little tiny donation to, you know, to kind of have a token like, oh, we support pro-choice, but really we're making sure that we're not going to stand in the way of this thing getting passed, you know, or overturned, because we know in 20 years it's going to give us a bunch of workers, or even now it's going to cause a boom in the demand for baby related products that we're selling or whatever the fuck. But again, maybe it's conspiratorial thinking. I don't know.
There is like numbers that I don't know. I saw this shit on TikTok. So
yeah. Hey man, that's my news source.
Listen, TikTok is a very valid news source nowadays.
Hey, motherfuckers be having for real citations and shit. Like it's some smart people, you know, doing information on there.
But yeah, the birth rate has decreased for the first time in however many decades. Mm. And that was like a big cause for alarm. And that goes back to what Evo and Alvin were saying about, like, you know, the economy. And that was one of his theories and what he was saying before the Roe versus Wade, you know, decision was overturned. He was basically saying that due to the numbers of like the birth rate, since it's decreasing now, this could be like a hidden agenda of them overturning that rule, or excuse me, that law.
And you know what's funny though? The funny thing is that so I get what birth rates decreasing mean when you look at like an outlook future slate for the economy in terms of like the tax base, in terms of like paying for social programs. I mean, like, you know, like Social Security is basically a fucking Ponzi scheme. So think of it in like those aspects of it. Somebody has to pay in. So you're getting less mm-hmm. people paying in over time, that kind of stuff. It has ripple effects. So I get it. There's a very simple way to solve all of that for most developed countries. Immigration. Just that is how you get around that, right? So like you just allow people to freely move into your country. That's what the EU was all about. The EU, because like birth rates fell in Europe first. So what they did was they just allowed free, consistent movement across all of those borders to try to get around the fact that they were doing that. So like,
which is, I believe that's what the Democrats are trying to do down south, is just open up the borders, right? I mean, I feel like that was a thing for a moment.
We're parents of Gen Z children, and we have a lot of conversations about what they see their future looking like. And a lot of these younger generations are talking about not wanting kids.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the world that they've seen before them. And now that they've taken away Roe v. Wade, don't you think that would further, like, perpetuate that type of idea? Like, girls are going to be afraid. Young women are going to walk around with this sense of fear that they can be criminalized if they accidentally get pregnant, then they may just abstain from it completely, which will then further minimize how many pregnancies there are.
I mean, that's one, you know, way to look at it. But I mean, who's to say which way it would go?
Yeah. What is this, day two?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's part of it. And I definitely think that there will be a lot of women who are really, but I think maybe we kind of have to take into account that like everybody doesn't have the privilege to be that like tuned in You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, of like, to kind of think about their body and their childbearing and the political atmosphere and the impact of all of those things as they're going through their dating life. Like, I think the majority of people really aren't on that wavelength. So a lot of people are still going to be out here doing what they did anyway, fucking as they were and as is their right. And then they're going to get slapped in the face by a shifting political landscape. And yeah, so I think there'll be like a small percentage of people who are like, I'm going to be really, really way more strict about my birth control and da 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 da, and I'm afraid to have sex and all this kind of stuff. But I think the majority of people are going to get slapped on the other side of that because they're just going to be living their lives as they should be able to. But then the government is going to come in and tell them that they can't get that abortion that they thought that they now realize they need.
Yeah.
Not to make
it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. How old is your daughter, by the way?
She's 8.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm having those conversations at eight years old. Like, they're having, like, those cognitive thoughts of, like, I don't know if I want to be a parent. Like, your child is saying that she doesn't know if she wants to be a parent. Word. While she's at 8 years old.
Yes, 100%. Damn. My daughter's dream, adult life is to live alone, have 2 huskies, and, like, live in some sort of, like, forest environment. Okay. She avidly speaks about that.
And is that shit. That's why. So is that because I feel like there's 2 ways that could arise. Mm-hmm. Is that like, is she still in like cootie phase, or is she just blown to like master's degree in gender studies level kind of political awareness? Because I feel like both sides of that could result in that.
Who like talks about like the environment?
Greta Thunberg.
Like a mini Greta Thunberg. Like,
she's definitely still kind of in the cooties phase, but she has a level of awareness that most girls her age don't have, and that's okay. Because we as a family, we speak very openly. You know, the boys, they have a platform to speak about what it is that they're feeling freely without judgment from us. Without them feeling like they don't have a voice in this house. So we have a lot of real conversations with our kids. Mm. And a lot of times if she's in the room. Like we don't shoo her out. Like she can't be part of the conversation, or like she's not part of this family. So she's heard a lot of adult conversations.
Yeah.
I fuck with that. Yeah. As 8 is, I wouldn't think about none of that. I was thinking about a lot of things, but nothing like that at 8, I don't think.
Yeah. We actually spoke to her about the whole Roe v. Wade thing.
So you have had those conversations with her? Or, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're in a way where we understand that we're talking to an 8-year-old, you know, so she gets, we give her like the 8-year-old version of it. It's not like a conversation that you and I would have, you know, like in this dialogue. But we try to help her understand, you know, some of the realities of what's going on.
Yeah,
what's that look like
in society?
Because eight years old is like third grade, right?
Well, she's entering third grade.
Entering third grade. Okay, so a second grader entering into third grade. I'm just wondering, mm-hmm. like, how do you? Because when I think about Roe v. Wade, it's like all of the things connected to it are very adult. It's sex, sexuality, it's childbirth, is where that comes from. Da 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 da. And so I'm wondering, like, can you walk us through kind of y'all's process for what that looks like to translate that to a prepubescent, an 8-year-old?
I'm wondering if any of you have ever seen that movie Captain Fantastic.
Yes.
Okay.
With Viggo Mortensen.
So, correct. So did you see that scene in the movie where his daughter asked him about rape?
I don't remember it. I do remember, like, go ahead.
No, it's okay. So in that scene in that movie, I was blown away by how he was able to have that conversation with his daughter. And basically what he did was he just made the conversation very black and white. This is when a man does this to a woman without her consent. So that's the same way we approach these type of conversations with our daughter. Mm. We just make them very black and white. So when we spoke to her about Roe v. Wade being overturned, we explained to her that there are times that women will become pregnant and choose not to want to follow through on that pregnancy. So at that point in time, if they make that choice, they'll go ahead and not have that pregnancy by terminating it.
And that choice is being taken away, which is a problem.
And it's literally just like that. And then we open it up for her to have questions. And a lot of the times, her questions, I think, would kind of shock you because they're very more so like, why would somebody do that? Mm. She's not really even questioning the information that we're giving her. She's questioning why those type of things are happening.
Yeah. Like why, it doesn't even make sense to her why that choice would be removed.
Correct.
Sort of thing. Cause she's coming from, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right. That like the way you even put it, just like very straightforward is like, this is what pregnancy is. You have a baby, it grows in your body. You sometimes don't want to, you know, have that baby. So you terminate it while it's still a pregnancy. And the government wants to make it such that you don't have the right to do that with your own body. Wham, bam. Pretty clear explanation.
Yeah, we just feel like that if she's asking, that's an opportunity to give her some information that she's actually being receptive of.
Definitely.
So, you know, we see those as opportunities to give her knowledge that it's important that she wants to receive it, you know? Mm. So like, it's like, for example, like if you just pull it to the side one day and say, hey, do you understand what's going on in this government right now? There's a thing, you know, like, and you're trying to give a kid information that they have no interest in, you know, it's just they're going to be like, what the hell, you know, and it's just going to be useless, you know? So every opportunity that we have, every opportunity that we have where she seems curious and wants to know something, then we're going to have a real conversation about it with her, you know, and try to explain it to her best as possible. We don't really try to like, you know, oh, you're too young for this information, or like, you know, kind of like just shoo her away. Like some, you know I have been, you know, in my life as a child talking, where I may have asked something and they're like, you know, thinking that I'm too young to understand. We try not to do that with her. We try to give her the information that she's asking for.
I love that. The idea of like let's cultivate that curious. Like if you're curious about something, this is, we might not ever get this opportunity again. Cause if I try and tell you when you're not curious, you don't give a fuck about that shit. But if you go, hey, I actually want to know about this thing, fucking hell yeah, that's that's the exact right time to give a child some information whose intentions, man, might otherwise not be in your favor.
Exactly.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. I was also wondering, because y'all have two grown or near grown or just about grown boys. Is that right?
Oh, no. We have a 25-year-old and 19-year-old.
Okay, so young adult sons. Or is this anything that y'all have, because I know I definitely got lots of pregnancy conversations and things like that, and obviously it's a different sort of other side of a coin kind of a thing, but is that something that y'all have those conversations or?
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
I want to say that to what Eva was saying, it's a very open floor in our house when it comes to these type of things. I also don't want to be shy about these things that happen to women around young men, because then they're going to go out in the world and they're going to be ignorant about it. So if I'm on my menstrual, my boys are going to know, so that when they then are with a young woman, they can understand what that means. So we're not shy about that.
Because that's what, like being around human beings is like knowing how a human being functions, like men and women included. It's I definitely fuck with that, because I think a lot of times we kind of separate people so much that they don't see each other as people. Like, this is what happens with this person. It's not nothing like completely otherworldly and alien. It's like, this is just part of what being a human being is. Like, half of people do this. Like,
yeah. So what's interesting is that the us constantly repeating these opportunities, right, where we see that the boys are curious about something and we give them the information that they're looking for, over time it's created a relationship where now they come to us, they seek this information. What I mean? So now it's like, you know, over time,
that's real shit.
Whenever we saw those opportunities, you know, we took them. So and if you can, like, what I think about is, like, you know, when my mom had the conversation with me about, like, sex, I didn't ask her about it. She just decided one day to, like, sit me down and talk to me about it, and it was weird. You know what I'm saying? And so I never, ever, like, really, like went to her for advice, because, like, it was just weird getting advice from her, you know, about life. She made that weird. You know, so over time, because like every time we saw an opportunity where they were interested, we sat them down and we gave them the information that they were looking for. It's created this dynamic to where now we are constantly having these conversations about life and things that most kids wouldn't talk to their parents about.
Yeah, real talk. Today, me and my son, the 19-year-old, I was driving him to a convention. He was telling me about how he's flirting with a girl at work, and I was asking him how he goes about doing that, just to kind of like pick his brain.
That's because it can, I don't know if the implication, if I'm reading the implication there right, but like I feel like there's a thin line between somebody thinks something is flirting and it not being exactly that. Is that kind of what the subtext was there? Yeah. So I definitely understand wanting to do that question of like, are you sure you flirting, big
dog?
Sure? Just yeah. Just so we know what's going on.
Does she really like you, or are you being weird?
Because that could happen.
And absolutely. Oh man, it's absolutely. I think. Why? I mean, that's a whole other big conversation, because I feel like workplace romance is way like real complicated, and we need a whole cultural shift on what that even looks like. But I think it definitely starts with at least the conversations of making men specifically, everyone, but like 85% men, just a little bit more aware of like, hold on, is this wanted? Like, are we on the same energy in this interaction?
Don't confuse her being nice with her flirting with you.
Right. Like, she literally is being paid to have to be next to you. Like, it's not exactly the same thing. So we need to get to wrap it, but I'm definitely very curious about where, like, what folks' rules are. So does anybody have any tips? Like, or maybe even did you tell your son, like, here's a good rule of thumb or anything? Because I've got my little tips on that kind of stuff.
I just told him, as long as she is kind of the one engaging the conversation. Because a lot of the times young women will feel that men are approaching them unwarranted. So if she's the one starting the conversation, then flow with it.
And I think you also kind of like asked him a few questions in regards of trying to confirm, was she actually flirting? And he was able to give you the answers that you were looking for, where you as a woman acknowledged
she was down.
Yeah, I was like,
she's definitely flirting. She was feeling it. Yeah. She was choosing on my boy.
The Cheesecake Factory in the evening shift. Yeah. She was ready. Yeah, no, I fuck with that. Yeah, because my rule of thumb is kind of like you can make one like pass or overture or like shot, shooted, or shot. Yeah, but then after that, exactly, right.
Shoot it. Rose by any other name
on, on this summer's eve. May I shoot my shotteth, young maiden? For if a shot were not shot, would it not have been shat? Oh, Romeo.
Eddie on his experience shit. Like
back that thing in twain. For sure. I guess my go-to is you can ask her out for drinks socially once, and then if it's a no or like a maybe or anything like that, you just don't ask again. But then she's got the opportunity to ask if it was like not the right time or anything like that. So I think that's until otherwise corrected, I feel like that's my go-to.
I like that. You put the ball in her court.
Yeah. Because it's like, I'm not going to ask twice. Because twice is crazy. Like, once you ask twice, you're now in a situation where you're now divorced from whether or not this person is interested or not. Like, you're acting without waiting for any kind of feedback of their interest. And that's like literally the building blocks of harassment. Like, if you asked and they went, oh, I'm busy on Thursday, cool. Don't say shit about it ever again in that workplace. You got the one time and that's it. That's my go-to.
Right, because in that moment, if she was really interested, she would have gave you the alternative right then and there. Like, I'm busy on Thursday, but I'm free Friday.
Absolutely. You know? She would give an alternative. Yeah. Or, and look, and this also happens of like, it can be slightly more complicated than this, but I feel like men try and wedge in on the gray area too much, where it's like, she might have wanted to, but maybe she was busy, or maybe she didn't know you well enough yet, or maybe she was like seeing another nigga at the time, and you know, so that she might have actually been very interested, but she said no in that moment and later would or whatever, but that's not your job to try and parse out and figure out like, oh, well, actually she wanted to say yes, but if I ask twice, she'll, you know, that kind of, it's not your job to wear her down or figure out the ulterior motives behind why she, if it's not, then leave it in that in that court, because yeah, nine times out of ten, she probably just wasn't feeling you that much.
Yeah, a lot of guys will be on their Jim Carrey Dumb and Dumber shit where they're like, so you're saying there's a chance?
Exactly, exactly. And I feel like a lot of niggas definitely trying, because like, they're not wrong. Like, I feel like sometimes, like a lot of times, there is like a little bit of a chance, or there might be some ambivalence or something like that. But a lot of times it's like, why would you want the hard sell anyway? Why would you want to risk that one in 10 that actually, when she said she didn't want to go out for drinks, she actually really did, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, just let it go. Yeah,
it's called being desperate.
Definitely.
Yeah, but some men like that challenge.
No, but I'm saying is like a lot of men they're desperate in trying to create an opportunity when there's one that's not obviously available.
Okay.
Yeah, and I understand what. God damn, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're being attacked over there, bro. Your plant's not having it.
I put it in a precarious position earlier, so it's not like it's propped up against the window pane. So, but anyway, we're about to wrap this shit up anyway. So, look, if you see the government slowly crouching in on your constitutional rights to bodily autonomy, taking away your right to abortion, you may be seeing a red flag. But if you start the fucking podcast halfway through, nobody knows what the fuck's going on. You got two guests. Might be you just waving the red flag. It's been Waving the Red Flag podcast. It's been Shit Talk Fridays. We'll see everybody next week. Before we do the, whatever, do y'all got some stuff to drop? Like, where should people follow you, et cetera, et cetera?
You could find us at Shit Talk Fridays on YouTube. You could find us at ST Fridays on TikTok. And this was awesome. Like, I'm going to miss you guys next week.
Great conversation.
Thank you so much for coming through, guys. Very much appreciated. Very much appreciated. Fantastic conversation. And, obviously, everybody, if you want to come through on the Patreon beforehand to watch us live as we talk to guests or just chat shit or just get set up, come through. You also get bonus episodes. For this episode, like, subscribe. Let us know, what you think about everything that we said down in the comment section. And we'll see y'all next week. Any final closing remarks, anybody?
Shout out to Raven the Red Flag.
Shout out Shit Talks. Most knuckle gang. I forgot to ask y'all. Maybe we need to do this next time, because Josh and me was having an argument about the difference between a MILF and a cougar, and it's getting a little bit heated, because I think people are,
I would love to get
terms
into that.
Yeah, maybe we'll save that one for next time. And y'all, you can look up some sources, you know what I mean, gather up some TikToks and Wikipedia articles when we come to the conversation next time. All right.
Yeah, we'll be ready.
It's a red flag.